What's up, War Stories fans? I want to talk to you about Ocker Leather Duty Gear for a minute. When performance is your number one priority, we all know choosing the right gear for the job is crucial to your mission success. I used Ocker Leather Duty Gear almost exclusively. If they made it, that's what I used. Ocker Leather Duty Gear gives you the confidence to perform at the highest level in the field, day in and day out. With over 40 years of experience crafting high-quality products for the law enforcement community, Ocker Leather specializes in making holsters, belts, and all the other accessories, and they stand the test of time. Let me tell you, I still have all my Ocker Duty gear, and it is well worn in, but still as nice as the day I got it. Major municipal and federal agencies from LAPD and Border Patrol trust Ocker to outfit their officers with duty gear that wears in and not out. And it's made in America since 1981, so that is awesome. Ocker is renowned for being the best name in leather, so visit OckerLeather.com and use the coupon code WARSTORIES for 10% off your order. That's Adam, King, Edward, Robert, Lincoln, Edward, Adam, Tom, Henry, Edward, Robert.com and use coupon code WARSTORIES for 10% off your order.
Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And I think we're both a little overheated today, and we're like 1,200 miles apart, but experiencing the same temperatures. It is, if you can believe this, when I got into my car after work today at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock or whatever it was, 115 degrees inside my car here in beautiful northern Idaho.
Wow. That's hot for up there.
That's really hot for up here. Even the people up here are like, here. Yeah, exactly. But at least we have blue skies and a nice breeze and a lake and a river and yeah, all those other things. You got Lake Los Angeles. That ain't no lake. It's like the LA River. The people, anybody that hears the term LA River, I don't want you to think of like rocks and ducks and, you know, a rambling river that runs. No, it's a concrete ditch.
Oh, it's horrible.
Filled with medical waste and homeless people.
They have LA River safaris, or like, let's go tour the LA River on kayak. And they show like beautiful, like this beautiful forest with water.
Let me tell you what,
it smells like piss. You have transients you can view, and they often steal your kayaks and then hijack them.
Right.
That's a true story.
Well, speaking of the asshole of LA, we have Dylan with us, and Dylan is our second highway patrolman. How are you, brother?
Doing good. Happy to be with you guys. Going to be a fun conversation and podcast.
That sounds like it. Now, I got a little cheating preview, Chuck, before you jumped on this podcast. But Dylan, you had a very interesting experience earlier on. You're not there anymore, but you were with the Highway Patrol in the hood, right? Compton, that area?
Yep. I work South Los Angeles. So we covered Compton all the way down to Long Beach, all through the South Central area. And then all the freeways as well, because that's what we're good at.
Right. Yeah, and so now you're not doing that anymore. But tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you end up getting into law enforcement? I know you have a college degree, but like you probably have one of the smartest college degrees we've ever had on the show.
Well, we'll see. It might be the coolest degree, but who knows if I'm that smart. So I started looking into law enforcement at a young age. My father was a CHP officer. So it was kind of something that always interested me. I decided after high school, I was going to go to college and pursue education in the social sciences. I continued on to get a bachelor's in criminal justice. And then I continued on to a master's program where my emphasis was biosocial criminology. I looked at behavioral genetics and neurobiology associated to.
I see your face, Chuck.
Criminals.
Yeah, this is a badass degree.
So it was very interesting looking into the question of nature and nurture and how those play into the aspect of an antisocial individual, which would be predisposed to a criminality of a sort.
What makes a shithead a shithead?
Basically, I love that. That's what got me in. And you know what? You're probably the same as me when you're in that class and your bachelor's when you're doing criminal justice, when you got to the criminology and you're like, this is the most interesting shit I've ever read. I want to keep going with it.
Yeah.
So tell me if I'm wrong, Chuck, and Dylan, tell me if I'm wrong as well. I think that if we had a party, right? If we had just a big party full of our brother cops and firefighters and veterans, right? You'd get a cluster of cops that would sit down with Dylan and we'd all be having drinks and this topic would take up the entire night. And then there'd be one cop's like, whatever, fuck them. They're just shitheads. They're just being shitheads because they're shitheads.
Yeah.
That's how that would go.
Most likely.
Yeah.
It's 100% what makes them tick. That's awesome.
I love that. I probably would have, if I'd have known that existed when I was pursuing a law enforcement degree, I might have gone after that because that's pretty awesome. But you've been a highway patrolman the entire time during college or after you got out of college? How did that work?
Yeah, right after college. I was in college in Texas, so I literally flew out for my interviews and everything, and then I right after I got done, graduated from my master's program, went straight into the academy and got my little Smurf suit on and graduated and went to LA.
Nice. Nice. So you went to Compton right out of the Highway Patrol Academy.
Yeah, that was the plan from the very beginning. You know, you start in the place where you're going to learn the most. My dad was like, hey, if you're going to start somewhere, you're single, you're young, get down there and learn. This will be the place to be. Spend 5 years there and then decide if you want to leave. But those 5 years will teach you a lot.
And you can, curious. I mean, you can get everything. Like being a highway patrolman in that area isn't the same as being a highway patrolman anywhere else in the state. You will get everything.
Yeah, it is the full diversity, full effect, all things you could imagine. They come across your patrol car really quick.
Yeah. I'm just curious. You said your dad was CHP. I'm just curious what years and what stations did he work at?
So he started in 1981.
Okay.
He was a 9779, a nine grander, one of the old school guys. He started in South Central, or he's Central LA, that office. After Central, he went to San Jose. Worked in the Bay Area for a little while, worked out of San Francisco. Then he worked as a motor training officer at the academy for its short stint. And then he went up to Humboldt County, finished out there in a resident post, and now has been retired, I think, 11 years.
Okay, wow.
Congratulations. So he's
taking full advantage of that pension.
Hell yeah.
I was hoping he's going to work at a station where my dad worked.
Where was your pops at?
Well, he started in South Los Angeles, but he started on the state police.
Okay.
When they dissolved in
91, right?
Or I mean, he had been on the state police since the 70s.
Yeah.
No. When did they dissolve? Is what he's saying.
Oh, yeah, in the 90s. I think
it was 90s, like 91.
Yeah.
And then he went to CHP Altadena, and then from Altadena went to AV office, and he did the AV office like the rest of his career.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's funny because I do the same thing when somebody's like, oh yeah, my dad worked at LAPD. And I'm like, what years?
what stations? You got to see if your dads know each other. Okay, so real quick, I'll tell a quick funny story about my dad that I don't know that I've ever told or he told when he was on the show. My old man, I go to a newly married, just had a kid. You know, I go to a trip to the river with my wife's friends and family, and I meet this dude, and he's a freshly, newly retired LAPD copper, and he worked Hollywood Division, and my dad worked Hollywood Division. I'm like, oh, I was wondering if you knew my dad, and I told him, and he's like, nope, don't recall. I said, okay, and I told my dad, you know, yeah, did you know this guy? And he goes, oh, yeah, I knew him. And I said, really? He said he couldn't recall you. Is there a reason why he wouldn't be able to remember you? And he goes, no, but there's a reason why I think he wouldn't want to remember me, or at least not admit to it. And I said, why is that? And he goes, I didn't know him from Hollywood Station. I knew him from IA. Oh, God. And my dad told me what he was doing on the side. He was selling criminal histories on the side to a private investigator. And my dad was the one that fanged him for it. And, so I was like, oh, yeah, I could see why in front of like a whole group of people, when I asked if this guy knew my dad, he wasn't going to look at all of us and go, yeah, your dad did the IA that got me 30 days on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So, Dylan, the floor is yours, my dude. I am looking forward to this story. I know just the basics of the bare bones of what happened. I can't wait.
Well, actually, I don't remember the exact date, but it was literally right as we had just gotten locked down for COVID. So
we're talking like March of 2020?
Like, yeah, it was like March 16th or March 19th.
I was going to say, yeah, right around.
Somewhere,
yeah,
right around there. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm a motor officer. I get the ride home and get to get dressed and then cruise into work looking all bitching like a chippy. and... So I'm just literally cruising down Harbor Boulevard, San Pedro. I lived in San Pedro at the time. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Vincent Thomas Bridge.
Yeah.
But so I'm cruising down, getting ready to go into work, just kind of, you know, breathing in the fresh air. And I look over to my right. There's a train yard with a bunch of cargo containers.
And let me have you explain, Dylan, because I don't people that aren't from the Los Angeles area may not understand what the port of San Pedro is like. So if you can paint that picture, because I don't know that people understand the
vastness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like this particular part of the yard, it partially is under the bridge, and there's, I mean, miles and miles of storage containers just stacked, you know, 10 feet tall by a row of like 20. And these just go all throughout the port. I mean, it's extraordinarily massive. The transit system through there is its own city, basically.
Anybody that's played like Grand Theft Auto 5 and knows like where you have to move the shipping containers and stuff, like those, it's a huge, huge container.
If you've ever seen like an old mob movie, this is like the place where people get taken and they like get killed and then thrown in storage containers. Basically, yeah. Like that. that's basically the gist of it for that area.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that has happened at the Port of Los Angeles many times.
You know, it might happen a few times.
Well, most definitely.
There may be a few pairs of cement shoes lying around the Port of Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I mean, it's so big that it has to have its own police. It's got to have the port police.
Yep.
Like it's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as I'm getting kind of by this area with these huge cargo containers, I see one of the trains moving and I'm like, all right, normally they go like maybe like 5 miles an hour in there because they're just doing small transport within. But this thing was moving, like moving really fast. And I'm like, what the heck? I was like, what's going on here? And let you mind, this is approaching the bridge where the tracks end. So I'm like, I'm like, huh, this doesn't look very good. And dude, sure as shit, this train derails. I mean, just nonstop keeps going. And like, I'm like, oh crap. I was like, maybe somebody just fell asleep and, you know, hit the switch and it's going.
Or maybe had a heart attack. Who knows?
Yeah. That's why I was like, okay, medical emergency, something like that. I go over radio to my dispatch. I'm like, hey, we have a train derailment, you know, start me fire, everything. Let's get this going. Possible hazmat on her hand. You know, that's what I'm thinking. So I flip around, I go over to this train, and like, as I'm pulling up to the front of this train area, where it had derailed, and it had stopped maybe, you know, 300 yards past the end of the track. So it was moving into this like parking lot area. I get up to the front of it and I see this like dude get out of the terrain. And I'm like, okay, well, he's alive. This is good. I'm happy.
Right. Okay.
And I'm like, okay, cool. And then like people are yelling. I'm like, what?
Wait, can you get a DUI driving a train?
It doesn't fall under a vehicle code.
I know, right?
I'm anyway, sure it has a.
I'm sure it's federal.
Law. It's got to be some sort of law against it. But I was just, I all of a sudden I'm thinking of a chippy pulling up and the guy, okay, now that the guy's alive, let's see if he's DUI.
Man, you always have to balance him out.
Right.
Got to get our deuce stat, man.
Right. You want to get that 23-152 badge?
Heck yeah. Wear that with pride.
Anyway, go ahead.
So this guy is getting out and I'm like, huh, all right. He's eager to get out. I would want to get out too. Then these people start yelling and I'm looking and this guy's booking it. Just running away. I'm like, all right. So he's got a backpack with
I'll
him.
Play.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Well, I would run too. Maybe. Why not?
A felony hit and run.
Yeah. This is a big one. So
yeah,
he's running away and he's got a backpack and stuff with him. And then there's some other guys that were working there and they just said, hey, he just stole that train and he's got a bomb.
Oh shit.
And I'm like, oh frick, man, this is way different than what I was thinking it was. And so I'm over dispatch putting this information out and, you know, like I'm really the only unit in the area. And I'm on my bike. So I'm like, screw it. I'm fucking going in there. So I get on my bike, go through the fence where I can get in through. And I start going into this cargo container, just trying to figure out where the hell this guy went. So I'm going along. Finally, I see that I was like, hey, like, did you see a guy running through here? And the workers are like, yeah, he's like 100 yards over there. I'm like, cool. At that time he was running closer to, I don't know if you remember, but there was the medical ship, the Mercy.
Yeah.
It was down there. So I'm like, oh shit,
the prison ship
had a bomb and he's going for the ship. So I'm riding through, I freaking see him and I'm like, oh shit, he's got a backpack. Maybe he does have a bomb. My backup's probably 2-3 minutes out, maybe more. I don't even know at this time. So I just,
right. Cause you don't have the same air as the port police or anybody. Like you can only have, you only have CHP air.
Yeah. So that's who I'm going through. They're trying to put out to get to Harbor PD to get out there, LAPD, whoever can get out there. I mean, let you mind, the LAPD Harbor Division is literally half a mile from my location.
Right.
So
they just have to know about it.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And so I get up on this guy, pull out my gun, and I'm like, dude, drop that bag. I was like, I don't want to deal with whatever's in there. Dude ends up being like super code 4. Get him into custody, handcuff him, sit him up against my bike and stand by for some car units to get there so I can throw him in a patrol car and then wait for SWAT to come out and check the bag. So there was no bomb though, luckily. That was a cool thing. I'm glad I didn't blow up that day.
Right. But,
it was
you're like, did that just happen?
Yeah. Would you? I was shocked. And this was before my shift even started.
Jesus. Oh, that's a hero moment, bro.
Yeah. It was just meant to be.
That's what you really love those ones.
Now, when you were chasing him on your bike, one was the Chips theme song playing through your head.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. Oh, it was playing in my head during that story.
Yes. And two, did the thought ever come across your mind, I'm going to pull out my baton and joust him off my bike?
I know. I'm more of a go for a kick while I'm on the bike, you know, like a solid, like lean out, kick him in the back or something.
Yeah.
But I haven't been cool enough to do that.
Right. I knew a motor who did it, but it was to a 14-year-old on a pocket bike that wouldn't yield. So it was kind of,
well, you know, adapt and overcome.
I know.
That's amazing, bro.
Yeah. That's a story you tell at parties and people just look at you like, are you fucking kidding me? And you're like,
yeah, dude, I still don't really believe it to this day.
Was everybody okay on the train?
There was nobody else on the train. He had literally gotten on. There was no other like conductors or anybody else on the train. Nobody got hurt. The worst thing was just that there was a bunch of diesel that spilled out of the train and got into the harbor.
So hazmat came out.
But after so we had to stand by because we had to call in the FBI, ATF. We had everyone come in. We had the Marine Corps,
the Navy,
yep. Everyone had to come in because this was a domestic terrorist threat. Wow. Because the attempt, either way, it was either the Vincent Thomas Bridge, which is a location of great threat that they have national security for. And then there was the Mercy ship, which was actually the target.
Targeting it.
Yeah. He later, during our interviews with him and in interrogations, he admitted that he was trying to derail the train towards the Mercy ship because he believed that there was the ship wasn't brought there for the medical reasons that they were stating because of COVID, but because of some, it was a mobile prison.
I just said that.
Yeah.
I love that. That was a big theory. We even talked about it kind of vaguely when all this stuff happened, is that there was this theory that was running around the I don't even know where it came from, but there was this theory that the Mercy was a prison ship.
Yeah. Because the guy was like, there's lights on at night and you never see anyone go in or out of there. Dude, you need to sleep. You're freaking crazy.
There's other reasons why people weren't going in and out of there. It's because a lot of things that you could say were are conspiracies, like mass amounts of people being really, really, really sick and needing that overflow just never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true.
I'm surprised that didn't hit the freaking news.
There's articles all over it.
Yeah, but it never made it
fairly quiet.
Yeah. Super quiet. Cause at that time I was watching the news every single day.
Yeah, you would have thought it would have been a little bit bigger, on the mainstream media and stuff like that, but it wasn't. Mostly it was just local news. It was put on, and then just a lot of newspaper and online articles. But yeah, I guess they didn't think it was that big of a deal.
So what did you what's the background in this guy? Nationality, ideology, he build the
was
bomb.
American. 16 years with the port. He worked
as an
engineer. He was an engineer for the port, for the trains.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and normal job. He was a good employee, just outstanding, a great guy. Everybody seemed to like. He had a wife, children, everything. But one day, he just said, dude, fuck this. He wanted to expose the world.
And so what did he had built the bomb?
No, so there was no bomb. I don't know how they ended up saying that there was a bomb. Maybe it's because he just had a backpack. So he never threatened that
it was a bomb or anything like that.
It was the people that worked there thought so.
Oh, okay. So the train was really he hijacked the train, no bomb.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just didn't know how to operate the train to go the opposite direction.
Yeah, he was in the right path. Literally, if it would have went, it would have had to go probably another 800 yards for it to possibly hit the Mercy. But it was.
So how close did the tracks get to the Mercy?
The Mercy was probably, it probably would have been 1,000 yards from the end of the tracks.
To the Mercy. So he had to get for an engineer, he didn't understand that his train was never going to make it. There.
Yeah, he wasn't that good of an engineer,
because to skid a train 1,000 yards,
you got to haul ass.
You got to have a lot of weight behind you, and you better be hauling ass.
Maybe he just watched too much.
He watched too much movies.
Yeah. Braveheart and stuff like that. 60 Minutes. That's he was going off of those calculations.
He's going off of I saw this in Point Break and
if Keanu can do it, I can do it.
No, what was that movie where the what was the movie with the runaway train? I don't remember. It was
Speed?
No, that was the bus.
That was the bus one.
Yeah. But
there is a runaway train one.
There is a runaway train one. And he watched that movie one too many damn times and he's like, I could do it. I could do it, coach. Put me in.
Did it have Steven Seagal inside of it?
So did he disappear? Did the feds just disappear him? Like, you, did you ever go to court? Like,
okay. I haven't heard anything from it. I had talked, honestly. Well, the funny part is the last time I spoke to the special agents, they were asking me about other cases. So I was like, well, I guess this other one's just kind of gone in the wind and we're just going to.
That guy got disappeared.
Yeah, probably.
Dude, he's at a black site somewhere.
Yeah.
Damn.
They're like, we can't trust him.
He's on a black site on the Mercy Ship.
Either he's in a mental institution because he was totally wrong and out of his mind, or he's in a black site because he was totally right. And
yep. Either one. Either one. 50-50 shot.
Jeez. That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. You're right. That is like, did the Chippies give you anything for it yet, besides the case of the red ass for not filing your paperwork correctly?
I got told a good job by my chief.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, you're like, I kind of caught a domestic terrorist, bro.
Yep. Not bitter or anything, but.
So like no medal or nothing?
Nope. They never even put me up for an accommodation.
What?
Wow. Not even like a letter in your jacket. Like,
I mean, I'm sure there's like a divisional letter, right?
There's no attaboy.
Yeah, I mean, they put on like my 100 form comment a 100 form comment is just like your monthly comments of good job. You really went out
it
there.
It rated a comment in your monthly report.
Yep. I didn't get there's a form 2 accommodation, which goes in like your jacket,
right?
Which always stays there and shows that you did some great thing.
Yeah,
that's
what I would think you get at a minimum is a letter of commendation in your jacket.
Nope. The Harvard chief of police, though, he wrote a letter for me.
Wow.
That's cool.
Just fucking now, wow.
Has it helped you in your career thus far?
No. They don't give a shit.
That's right.
It wasn't a DUI.
That's right. If this guy had been drunk when he hijacked the train.
Dude, I would be the commissioner.
You'd be a fucking, I was going to say, you'd be pretty high up there now.
So
I
mean, you guys have heard of the 10851 pins, right? For stolen vehicles.
For stolen vehicles.
So as a joke, I said, screw it. And I bought a little gold train pin that goes on my pocket. Because I recovered a stolen train. I was like, screw you guys.
That's awesome, dude.
So I'm going to wear that for our Cat 10 inspections. And if the chief or commissioner wants to say anything about it, I'll be like, what? What are you going to do?
It's a 10857, bro.
It's not a lie. You know, like,
you
just tell someone who stole a train.
Exactly.
That's awesome. It was a 10851 Magnum.
Exactly.
Dude, I got to tell you, there's, you know, those guys, a bunch of guys out there, and I'm sure it's the same in your department. They wear the 10851 pins, you know, the first award, second award, whatever, you know, like they wear them with pride and almost kind of cocky about it. Yeah. You trump all of them, bro.
I know.
They don't got shit on me, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, you got a train.
Yeah.
And not only did you get a train, you got a train hijacked by a domestic terrorist that's either insane or cracked the code.
He's either insane or he's right.
Right, exactly.
whichever one is least scary.
Yeah, it is, you know. Good thing he didn't have information on the Clintons.
Right? He'd be suicided.
He would have been found hanging in the train.
Right.
Oh my god. Well, so you've had you're an athlete too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Currently right now I do competitive bodybuilding. I'm actually 5 weeks out from my national championships. So it's a competition.
You're like the buffest. You got your master's degree and your bodybuilding champion. So you're the buffest nerd with a badge and a gun.
Exactly.
That's the NPC, right?
Yeah, the NPC. So the NPC has the USA championships. And you go there, if you win, you can get your pro card.
Oh yeah.
Which would be absolutely amazing. This is my first time going to a national show and I just want to see where I stand. You know, it's the best way to judge it. And if I go pro, that'd be freaking cool as shit. But at this point, I just want to make top five and show that I'm worthy of even being there.
Now, I don't want to stroke your ego too much, but I'm about to.
But let's bring it.
I follow.
Just like you recovered a train and you're a professional bodybuilder. You can get his number later.
I may already have it. Anyways, just kidding. Anyways, like I follow pro bodybuilding just as I'm assuming you do too. Obviously, but your physique, and are you doing the physique one or are you doing?
No, I'm doing bodybuilding. So I'll be in middleweight bodybuilding.
Okay.
Is the category that I'm going to compete in at nationals.
You have a really, really good physique, man. I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, stroke it too much, but it's pretty freaking gnarly. I've seen a lot of your stuff, and one, you're strong, two, great physique. And I don't know if you've got a coach or whatever, but I mean, it's on point. I mean, you're doing the right things. You're getting up there, and I think it's phenomenal where you're so dialed on your diet and you're so dialed on everything else that you do along with work. I mean, that's crazy. How do you do that?
It just comes down to like just structure, and you have to choose what's important. And you plan ahead. I mean, fortunately for me, I have an amazing fiance. She is a pro bodybuilder. And so we're prepping together. I'm 5 weeks out. She's 6 weeks out from her pro debut, and we've always prepped together. So we are structured, making sure food's ready, meals are prepped, supplements are, you know, set up, you know, all of our vitamins. And on top of it, you just have to go. There's no compromise. You know, you always hit the gym, you get the cardio in, you always go to work because you got to make money. And you just don't give yourself the excuse to fail.
That's amazing.
And that's the biggest thing.
Now, you got, if I'm not mistaken, when we were talking, you got injured and you're still able to get past that and get to where you are now.
Yeah. Back in October, I was on duty going to a basic call, just assisting a motorist. Towards the end of my shift, just not thinking anything of it. And a drunk driver going down the freeway, like about 80 miles an hour, lane changed over to try to make an exit and ran me over. So I ended up, I had a torn ligament in my hand, some fractures in my hand. I had dislocated my shoulder, still figuring some stuff out there. I found out that I had herniated discs in my lumbar and just road rash.
And to top it all off, I had a little road rash.
Yeah. And like, I had like lost the skin on the palms of my hands and shit. So like, I couldn't grab things for a while.
Oh,
that sucked. But you know,
I bet that sucks.
So how did they end up running over you?
Like they were going to come across, like I'm in the number four lane. So the far right lane, I'm cruising, okay. I'm getting ready to go to my transition. And right as I'm coming up to the exit that this guy wanted to get to, he's from the number one lane. Changes over and just fucking hits me.
So he's bombing off the freeway from the number one lane, cross three lanes of traffic to the exit and just nails you?
Yeah.
Did he just not see you?
No, just didn't see me. But all the passengers in the car saw me because all their statements were like, yeah, he just changed over and ran the cop over. I'm like, well, thank you.
Did they charge him with anything?
Yeah. He ended up pleading not guilty to a felony DUI.
Well, there you go. Of course.
Yeah. But did he get the felony DUI?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, you know, it really, like, in all reality, I hate to see it happen because, I mean, obviously I got hurt and shit, but this kid was a young kid, second year law school, went out and drank too much and decided, hey, we're going to go down to downtown Sac. And he changed his life in a matter of a moment.
Yeah. One night out.
Yeah.
I mean, don't drink and drive, kids.
Not even kidding. Don't drink and drive, kids.
Yeah. He changed my life. And also, he could have changed my life in an extremely worse way. I was extremely fortunate that I actually walked away from it. You know?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, luckily I was able to recover as best I have. I still have some pre-existing injuries that I'm dealing with, but I've been able to find ways to work around it and stay committed to my you know, my other goal of bodybuilding and staying healthy, especially for the job.
Well, based on the size of you, I'm surprised this car was able to get over you without four-wheel drive.
It was an SUV, so you know, he had a little, higher suspension.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other experience too that can change your career. Like, I mean, first of all, okay, obviously, how many people ever get to, like, you know, chase a domestic terrorist hijacking a train and aiming it towards a hospital ship docked in the port of Los Angeles? But then how many of those same people transfer, you know, several hundred miles away and then get some second year law student who decided to have two drinks too many on a night out with friends run them over and survive? I mean, just one of those incidents will change your life and your career.
Yeah. You know, it definitely, it made me kind of rethink some stuff going through that incident. You know, obviously this was the first time where I was with my fiance and something of like a critical incident happened. So it was more so not even just thinking about myself, but thinking about how it affects, you know, the loved ones around me. And like, you know, that kind of hit me a little bit harder than even thinking about, like, you know, what if I was paralyzed or what if I had died?
Right.
You know, it's more for them and how that would affect them than myself. But in reality, I went over the situation over and over and over, and there was literally nothing I could have done different to change what occurred. And that's what made me go, you know what? The first day that I'm going back to that road, I'm going to be in my fucking tall boots, in my tans, riding a fucking motorcycle, because
that's
what I do.
Right. Oh. And it didn't matter. Nothing else mattered. That was going to happen. That was just what was. And the fact that you were going to survive it was what was going to happen. And the fact, you know, it's interesting you say that, because it's the first critical incident you've ever experienced where you've had someone else to think of. But what's also great about that is obviously she's still your fiance.
Yeah.
And obviously she has the same, you know, interests as you, as far as, you know, recreation, athletics, bodybuilding and stuff like that. But having to experience as the fiance, girlfriend, wife of a police officer, having to experience them almost getting killed, it can put all of those bonds to an extreme test.
Yeah, it absolutely can. You know, she handled it like a champ. Her family comes from like offshore oil rigging.
So she's used to tough, like,
yeah, you know, her dad would be gone for 2 weeks, a month at a time, or, you know, some of these guys would be out there working on the oil rigs and they don't come back.
Right.
You know, so that was like kind of something that she was already familiar with, that feeling of like, it might not be, you know, another time that I see them, you know, so she's kind of prepared for that. You know, family's also military background as well. So, you know, loss of life is an unfortunate thing, but a thing that you think of.
Right. Yeah. So she's had those conversations with herself already. So having this conversation with you, or having those feelings like, oh my God, I almost lost them, this job is so dangerous, how can I let somebody I love go off to work like that? She's already had those kinds of similar feelings growing up then.
Yeah, exactly.
It kind of prepares her for it a little bit.
Yep. And I mean, she, like she said, she's like, of course I'd rather you not do this job because it is dangerous. But she's like, I would never ask you to not do it.
Right.
Because that's not my position to ask you not to do that.
And I mean, you know, ostensibly you were doing this job when she met you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh yeah.
You knew
you know what you're in for. You know what you're in for.
I mean, my wife is the same way. I mean, I know she's your fiance, but she seemed to be your wife. Yep. My wife said the same thing. She got with me, you know, I was already a police officer for some time. And we started off with a bang, you know, critical incident, shooting, whatever. And she stuck through it. She was a great support system, really helped me more than she knows. But she said the same thing. I would never ask you to not do it. She's obviously, I don't want you to. But she's also like, at 20 years, I want you done.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So
I'll stick with it as long as I'm supposed to, but you need to not stay in it any longer than you have to.
Hey, I don't blame him to ask that. It's a stressful job being a spouse to a law enforcement officer.
I've said it on this show, yes. But I had a chief that said, we may wear the badge, but they carry it, you know, and
it's a very well stated phrase there.
Yeah. Because, absolutely. And my son admitted to me the other day, my son's almost 17. My daughter just turned 20. My son and I were sitting on the couch the other day and we were just talking about, I don't remember how, we were probably watching a time travel movie or something about time travel. And we're talking about, you know, go back and do things differently or different timelines or whatever. And, you know, I said something about, I'm, you know, not a cop anymore. And he's like, yeah, you know, I wish we could go back time and change that. I said, oh, you miss dad being a cop? He goes, yeah, that was cool. And he doesn't remember it as much because he was a lot younger when I retired. But my daughter, when I talked to her, she's like, no, dad, I'm much happier now that you aren't a police officer, because it scared me. I was a little kid. I remember being scared when you would go to work, you know. So I didn't ever ask them that stuff. I never even had those discussions with, does it scare you when daddy goes to work? And it, now that they're teenagers, they're admitting to me, you know, the little deep fears that they had, or in my son's case, he just thought it was cool.
Yeah. Dad's got a gun, some shiny shit on his belt. He's cool,
right? Man, he gets to pull people over, take people to jail, get in fights. I mean, admittedly, that's what I thought when I was a kid and I looked at my dad.
Yeah. I mean, as police officers, we're a different breed. So we don't see how it impacts and affects our families. But I can tell you that the spouses, the fiancés, you know, the living long-term girlfriends, you know, it's very hard for them. They're impacted a lot and they have a very tough job being with us as police officers. And I got to tell you, when I was a kid, my dad got me some, like, this little CHP with the triangle lights on it, the old Crown Vic. And it would play like different, like the chirps, the yelps and all that other stuff and the siren.
Right, right.
And I remember sitting at home when he would leave for work and I would, some days it would be tough and I'd cry because I didn't know if he was going to come back, you know, and it's tough. And as a child, I know it's tough. And so for our kids, I know it's even tougher on them, you know, not knowing. And that's great that we have a great support system, but we can't ever forget about them, you know?
Yeah. There's still people at home that care about you, and they care about you more than they care about that job. You care about that job. They don't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, and you got to find that balance in your heart as to whether or not, you know, if what's worth it to you, what's important, you know?
Right. And that is a key thing too, is like, if you're the kind of cop that will choose the job over his family, then just don't have a family, right?
Exactly. Like,
there's lots of cops that enjoy badge bunnies and no kids, and they retire. You know, the problem is though, when you retire, guess what? You have nothing.
Nobody there.
Right.
And
if you think you're going to have your law enforcement family, you got another thing coming.
Yeah, because they have their families that they developed that they're going to go enjoy after they retire.
That's right.
They're going off to wherever they go.
Yeah, I've got a buddy right now that's going through the process of retirement, and he could have probably medically retired a while ago and just decided that he was going to be, you know, I guess soldiering through it, for lack of a better term. And he finally decided, you know what, for my own sanity and for the sanity of my wife and my children, I'm done. I don't need this. I've done everything I came to do. Why ride it out just to get to the 20 year mark or whatever? I'm good. If I can retire now, I'm going to do it. And he's got like 17 years on the job or whatever, but he's good. He's done.
Hey, if it works for you, do it. Whatever's the best for your life.
Yeah. I mean, what was that picture we posted with the chief of LAPD saying they had to hire? The number was laughably low. Is it like 600 cops or something?
It's like 700 because 600 have retired.
Right.
and I think it's probably an all-time high. I mean, the LAPD wants to keep its numbers at 10,000. Has it ever been truly 10,000? No.
No.
It's been like high 9,000, but now it's getting drastically low.
It's below and, 9.
Yeah, I mean, they have to hire in this new year. Well, it's, you know, halfway through 2021, but they have to hire like 600-700 officers just to manage for attrition. So they're going to try to 700, try to manage for attrition. But I mean, and I just saw a post the other day that, you know, they bragged about how they had like diversity within their group. And, you know, and a friend of ours, Ken, who's been on the show multiple mm-hmm. times.
Yes.
Who worked in backgrounds, even made a post. And I was reading his comments on there, and it was about that whole thing. And, you know, it's their hiring. It's given the optics of their hiring, not the qualified candidates, but the candidates that are going to make them more diverse. And hey, I'm all for diversity. I'm all for hiring the right people for the job, but they have to be the right people for the job. Because if you don't, you're going to run into scandals. They've already had the Rampart scandal. They've had a lot of different mm-hmm. scandals. You start hiring people who are not inept for the job, that are not capable of the job, and they can't do the job, but they match a certain description of what you want. You're going to end up actually with corruption. You're going to end up with a lot of dangerous things you don't need. And I think that's going to be a problem. And I hope it's not, for the sake of the way police work is going in this day and age. And I hope they make the right decisions. I don't know if they will. They're going to have to hire a mass amount of people. And there's not that many people that want to be police officers right now.
No,
but there's a lot of good candidates. And, you know, when I was going through processes of being a police officer, I got and almost felt discriminatory against veterans. You know, I got told by a polygrapher right when I met him that you're a thief. What? I was like, before we even started, he's like, I know you're a thief. He's like, all military guys are thieves. You know, gear adrift is not a gift. I mean, you steal shit. And I'm like, whoa, bro. Like,
even this is how we're
first meeting. Yeah. Like, you don't know,
yeah, right.
You don't know my background. And in fact, I wrote that blank check a long time ago when I was, you know, 18 years old, and I was willing to cash that shit in for the freedom of the United States. So at the same time, I'm like, that's completely disrespectful. But you wouldn't see him doing that to somebody else. And so there are lots of military guys that make great police officers, and that they should be hiring people who are qualified and people who have the education to do it, but not only the education, but the life experiences. And, you know, I think they're going to run into problems. And I've seen personally on the job cops that have been hired solely based on what they thought was needed at the time.
Yes, and social qualifications.
They're not good cops. In fact, a lot of them are scared. And I've seen it on videos where you see a cop getting into a use of force, and you have two guys that are, or two or three coppers that are in there wrestling with this suspect, aren't able to take him to the ground. And you have three people in the back who are young coppers, you know, young guns, and they're just watching. They're not doing anything. And they're kind of doing this thing where they're dancing back and forth, but you're like, you're not jumping in. You're not trying to help your brothers and your sisters. You're just watching.
It's indecision. Or
they cower.
Exactly.
I've seen it personally where these new, you know, boots, they cower. And I'm like, how is he or she still going to have this job if they can't even do the job? Like, that's unsafe. And so I hope that doesn't happen in the future. But if you're hiring that many people trying to do it that fast, you're going to start cutting corners places, and you're not going to be hiring the most qualified. You're going to be hiring what you think is good, with whether it just be schooling or whatever, and you're going to end up with a lot of BS.
My wife had a list of cops, and it was about two or three names, maybe four. And the list was names that if I am injured or killed in the line of duty, and you find out, the first thing you got to find out is who was working. And if it's one of these names on this list, you immediately get a lawyer and you have them subpoena all of their hiring, personnel, and training records for that person before the department can bury it. Because I had cops on my department that had no business being on my department. I knew it. They had no, there were training issues, and there were hiring issues. We had one cop whose gender shall remain a mystery, but she was a cadet at our agency.
Good job at hiding it.
Yeah, she was a cadet at our agency, and we went there for a party call. Right, she's a cadet. She's a basically, you know, before she goes to the police academy, she's a student worker. She's going to college for criminology. She's got a part time job taking counter reports. She wears the light blue shirt, the badge. You know, she's halfway there, and she's a cadet with our agency. She's 19. We go to a party call at her house. We know it's her house. We know what her address is. We know where she lives. But she's underage and she's drinking, and everybody at her house is drinking, and the cops show up at her house, and guess what she does? She bolts out the back over the fence.
What the fuck?
Right? She works for our department, right? She bolts out the back over the fence when we go there for a loud party call. We knew she bolted. We ended up talking to her about it later. You know what the department did? They hired her to be a cop.
Jesus. Didn't and seem right.
So her name made the list. The list of people, because there were a bunch of other issues I could tell you about, but that, like, if you hire somebody with that kind of moral character, you're going to have problems. Period. Yeah. End of story. So I think that's a more common problem than people understand. And I think it's going to only get worse.
I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, especially if you have to hire so many people in such a short period of time, and not to mention, if you're not allowing people like have enough training officers to complete the task at that given time, because if you're going to be hiring 600, 700, 500, 400, 300 people for most departments,
you need a training officer every single one of those people.
Exactly, and you're not going to have enough.
Yeah, and I should be rephrasing. You need good training officers for every single one of those people, and we all know that there's the other as well.
And Dylan, this question is going to be geared towards you. Because we're the only two active peace officers, but and I want to know it from right now, not to be disrespectful to Tom.
Yeah, no worries.
Let me gather my thoughts for a second.
Just say it.
No,
are you
no,
trying to say it without getting in trouble?
I fucking brain farted.
All right,
give me a second. We have movie magic. We can work. So super embarrassing.
Did your mental train just jump the tracks? Like,
dude,
that's all right.
Derailed.
We were just talking about, you know, the quotas are going to be an issue. And the bottom line is that you need these quality training officers. You need good people that can
got it.
These people.
He's got it now.
That's why I figured if I said enough, you'd get there.
Yeah. So what the trend that I've seen on agencies in my agency and other agencies have been, they're not hiring, they're not promoting training officers that have time on, that have super vast amounts of experience that they can give on. They're hiring the newer ones who haven't yet had a bunch of complaints or a bunch of use of forces. And they're like, well, this one's better because their packet is cleaner, but they don't necessarily have the experience. Yet there's a guy who we've got 10, 15 years on who's been begging, or girl, granted, because I've seen it both, who have 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years of experience, are hardworking cops who everybody goes to them for advice, even other training officers. Yet they're not the ones getting promoted. Have you seen the same trend? Yeah, other agencies, maybe yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we got guys that they go to FTO school with a year on. You know, what the hell did you know?
Wow.
When you had a year on, what did you even know?
What?
I didn't know shit. When I look back at it, I was like, fuck, dude, I couldn't even fight my way out of a wet paper bag.
I know, like, you know? 3 or 4 is like minimum to start really knowing what you're doing.
That's, and I mean, five. So I went to FTO school when I had, I think, just a little over 3 years on.
But you also had a master's degree and a lot of life experience. So that changes things a bit.
I was also a professor while I was a master student. So I taught, I was an educator. Right. You know, I do have a large background and a lot of knowledge over things. But there was guys that were junior to me that went to FTO school before me because they had a cleaner rap sheet. I don't have a dirty rap sheet by any means. It's just, I got into shit.
Right.
And uses a force.
You're doing the job. They smelled nicer than you.
I put on cologne every day, so I don't know.
But I do have to say, at three, that's pretty quick. I mean, I have a buddy of mine who, at I think at five or six, got it, and we're like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, normally, like, I would say around 5 years is a good point.
Yeah, to start considering it.
Yeah, and for, but like down in like Southern Division, a lot of the offices are like revolving doors. So like, I was like top dog for B watch, bar swing shift. Yeah. I was like the senior guy.
So sometimes it's out of necessity.
Yeah, I was a lot of times, like some weekends, I was OIC. We didn't have a sergeant, and I'm the guy.
And I remember being the watch commander. There, yeah. Being the watch commander as a slick sleeve because there was nobody else.
Yeah.
And that was like, so I haven't been, I mean, you're not gonna fuck me over if I like make the wrong decision or something. Right. They're like, oh no, not at all.
Don't worry about it. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Man. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Listening to you guys, I'm like, ah, shit, I'm getting screwed.
Yeah, you probably are.
I've got a decade on of policing, and I've been injured a couple of times, whatever, but like I never wanted to be a training officer. I didn't want that type of role because I had it when I was in the military, and I was like, I'm so done. Like, I don't want any responsibility. I want to be in control of myself and the citizens. That's it, in my car. But then as I'm starting to see more and more people who are not qualified, you know, they may have time on, but they don't have any experience. And I'm like, you know, and I see other training officers, you know, that have time on, but they don't have experience. And I'm like, it's not necessarily a training officer I would imagine to be training other people. And so now I'm finally like, you know what, I'm gonna start throwing my hat in the ringer and we'll see what happens. Yeah. But that could be a whole nother episode.
That it could be all another episode.
That is true.
Well, as we wind down, we always give our guests a chance to dedicate the episode that they're on to a fallen brother or sister officer, firefighter, military veteran, family member who has lost their life in the line of duty. And we want to give you that chance first, Dylan, if you have anybody.
Yeah, I don't have anyone off the top of my head right now. Sorry about that, guys.
No. Don't be sorry.
No worries.
So if you don't have anyone, Dylan, we have somebody that we'll always have somebody that we want to dedicate the episode to. Chuck.
So I'm just going to start off. I'm on ODMP right now. That's Officer Down Memorial Page. This year, line of duty deaths just this year are 159.
Oh
yeah. It's really 159. High.
Damn. I didn't last year we got there.
Yeah. Last year there was 368 line of duty deaths. It's pretty astonishing. I'm like, holy crap. And I have a shirt, you know, from Relentless Defender years ago. And I think it says like 140 or 150 on it because that's the average. This war on cops has been ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would like to dedicate the episode to Sergeant Dominic Vaca, who's with the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department in California. His end of watch was May 31st, 2021. Sergeant Dominic Vaca was shot and killed following a vehicle pursuit of a motorcycle in Yucca Valley at about 2 p.m. Deputies were conducting enforcement operations for off-highway vehicle violations when they attempted to stop the motorcycle near Paxson Road and Imperial Drive for having no license plate. The driver abandoned the motorcycle near Dumas Avenue and Sunny Slope Drive and set up an ambush for responding deputies. As the deputies approached the motorcycle, the subject opened fire on them, fatally wounding Sergeant Vaca. Other deputies returned fire and killed the subject. I mean, subject is suspect, but whatever. Sergeant Vaca was flown to a trauma center where he died a short time later. Sergeant Vaca had served with the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department for 17 years. He was 43 years of age. His tour was 17 years. So,
well, Sergeant Vaca, rest easy, brother. We got it from here. You're right. It is kind of out of control. It goes a lot to what we were saying about, you know, cops being just done. There, you know, cops that might have stayed an extra 2 or 3 years or an extra 5 years or were going for that little bump in their pension or, you know, maybe could have stuck it out, but they have another job offer that they would never have taken in a better climate. But now that they're, you know, looking at how shit law enforcement has got it right now, they're like, nope, fuck it, I'm out. That's happening so much more. And a lot of it is due to this war on cops. And it, if you don't think it's happening, and I'm not trying to get political, obviously it is a little bit political, but it did make me completely like rage, like want to throw my phone across the room to see that the White House press secretary blames the conservatives for the defund the police movement.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
If you are a listener who is not conservative, let's say you're a listener who's maybe more liberal, which I don't know if we have, I don't know the political leanings of our listeners, but I could probably guess. And you have an explanation as to how this is even remotely possible, I would love to hear it, because I just don't understand. I see Antifa and BLM as being the number one and number two reason for the defund the police movement. And then cops doing dumb shit as the number three reason. But, you know, that's, cops are always going to do dumb shit, especially when you change them hiring practice like we talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, increase the percentages of cops that are going to do dumb shit that when you do that.
I always say it this way. Cops that get in trouble for small, stupid things, they're not the ones who are the problems. They're not the ones that are hiding shit, obviously, because they're getting caught for stupid, small things. The ones that are picture perfect, that are like the poster child, are the ones out there that are probably doing, not all, because there's some really good cops out there, you know, and there's some cops that mess up, but most cops in their career will mess up because they're human. It's just, right. It's going to happen. In every profession, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the ones who are never getting in trouble, they're squeaky clean, those are the ones that I'm most likely like,
I'm more suspect of. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not saying they're going to do the wrong, I'm not saying they're doing the wrong thing, but it just seems odd because, I mean, I've got,
let's face it, if you're dirty, you're not going to want to draw attention to yourself,
right?
And making stupid mistakes or taking risks like good cops often do is gonna draw attention to you. You know, I had a mentor of mine say, if you're not getting a complaint every once in a while, you're not out doing the fucking job,
right?
So
yeah,
fair enough. It's just the way it's gonna happen. So
anyway, business.
Well, Dylan, I appreciate you coming on. I will make sure and talk to you in the future, if you don't mind. I'd love to hear some more of your stories. I know you had some others kicking around, but I'd also like, we'd come back and tell us how you did at Nationals, man. I'm like invested in seeing you go to the big show, because I'm telling you guys, you can look this guy up on Instagram. I don't know if you want to give your Instagram account out and get more followers, but yeah, this sure. Dude is massive.
He's built. Dylan built.
Yeah, if you guys want to check me out, by all means. My Instagram is Dylan_built. Yeah, check it out.
And at the risk of sounding a little rude, Dylan and his fiance both are bodybuilders and frequently post pictures of themselves together. So if you don't want to follow Dylan,
you can always follow her.
You can always follow her.
He has way more followers than I do. So,
well, 100%, I follow you.
Woo! Yeah.
So, Dylan, again, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you telling us all that stuff. One of these days, whenever we're in the same place, we'll have to sit down, have a drink, and discuss nature versus nurture, because as we talked about before we started recording, that subject is 100% fascinating to me, because it applies to way more than just the criminal justice system. It applies to so many things in life.
Absolutely. So, thank you guys for having me. This was fun, and I'll definitely be back.
Yeah, appreciate it. And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.